You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
What's up, and welcome everyone to Faces and Feels. I'm your host, Rafe Houston, and today I'm joined by a very special guest. Now, this man is the current STW reigning defending Southern Cross champion, the non-stop catwalk show, rugged elegance. It's gorgeous, Gary. How are you today, sir?
I am fabulous, and thank you for the great introduction as well.
Mate. You know what, if you can make the time to get on here, I can make the time to give you the proper introduction that you deserve.
Oh, look, I never tired of hearing all those things said about me, although I did write them for myself, so that's okay.
Look, nobody needs to know that. I mean, you can just say that they're, you know, they're words from the people that have just stirred up over time.
Cat's out the bag.
Exactly right. So, yeah, thanks so much, mate. This is one where, you know, I had to reschedule on you a couple of times. So, again, I just thank you so much for making time for me on this evening. You know, it's a weeknight. We've all got shit going on. I know you do. You were telling me a little bit about your real life, which is a lot. So I just really want to thank you first and foremost, yeah?
No, not a problem at all. Look, anytime that there's extra promotion for Australian wrestling, I'm all about it. Mm. I think as far as I'm concerned, there should be more eyes, more bums in seats, you name it, because there is some amazing talent across Australia. And anyone that's happy to promote it more and more, I will give a lot of my time for those people and really do appreciate them.
Oh, that's amazing, man. I really do appreciate it. Well, let's jump into it then. I only ever have one question on this show to get started anyway, and that is when you think back to how you got into professional wrestling, how it first walked across your doorstep, what were some of the first faces that stood out to you, you know, the characters that were larger in life that probably caught your interest a little bit there?
Well, it was two, Shawn Michaels and Jerry the King Lawler, funnily enough. So I think with Shawn Michaels, it was just a case of like just his connection to the audience and just how amazingly athletic he was. Mm-hmm. And then when it came to Jerry the King Lawler, just how much he could just really piss people off.
what kind of era is this? Is this the same kind of era, like, or was this at sort of different times? So I mean, this at like, say, the first time you saw Shawn Michaels, what sort of era Shawn Michaels are we speaking about?
We're talking about the mid 90s, so we're talking about 1995, 96. I mean, the 95, we can never forget the Royal Rumble. He went from number one to number 30, and yeah. You know, that really got me, that sort of encapsulated my interest, seeing that feat and just really believing in how much just that last bit with him and the British Bulldog. Only one of Shawn Michaels' feet hit the floor. And
yeah.
I don't know. I'd get chills. I just got chills just then, just sort of thinking about it, those goosebumps. Yeah. And yeah, it's a moment I'll never forget. And that's, watching that and feeling that made me go, all right, cool, I'm going to just get on my couch and do some of these tricks and do it terribly because I'm not trained.
Try not to be injured and then go from there.
And practice with my brother. And, you know, that's sort of part of the reason I got into it, because I'm just like, I felt this thing about me just go, I want to do the same thing these people are doing. Sure. This is fun.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I've watched like every Royal Rumble. It's probably like my favorite of the WWE pay-per-views. In fact, recently we were having a game. We used to have a drinking game. Well, we still do when the next one came out, but it's called Getting Rumbled, where we essentially drink, like, say you've got four people playing. As people come out, you get a person in order, and that keeps rotating around. So you keep getting additional wrestlers as they come out, but then you also So you drink when they enter, you drink when they leave, you drink when they do a signature move, and you drink when they do a finishing move, and you drink when they eliminate anybody. So let me tell you, you do get pretty rumbled. But out of all of those Royal Rumbles, that particular one, you know, that sort of era there, there was a run of Rumbles that were really, really good, and like telling those stories, like with the Shawn Michaels stuff and then the Stone Cold stuff and that they really stand out like as some of the best ones.
Yes, absolutely. Look, I mean, that one was huge. And then, you know, any time that there was a Rumble that had a whole bunch of surprise names, I remember one time Bob Backlund came out. That was really cool of all people. But
it was weird, right? I was like, what the fuck is this guy?
I don't know. I think Rumbles for me, it was just quite the excitement factor of that surprise as well. Let's not forget when Jerry the King Lawler, he hid under the ring for quite some time and then just kind of came out and you thought, oh, he might have more of an impact, and then he got thrown out straight away.
he was so good. When you were first exposed to the King, was it that, like, he was on commentary, or were you seeing him active as a wrestler, or were you going back and watching old tapes, or?
Well, I actually went back and watched old tapes as well. So I was just sort of intrigued by this person, this loudmouth, and just the way he would bounce around the ring. And then, you know, in later years, I sort of I read his book and came to appreciate how a guy of his age can still sort of fly around the ring and have so much longevity in that. And he doesn't do much at all. Yeah. Like, he does a fist drop, does a really good pile driver, body slam. That's about it. And I guess that sort of intrigued me, that his ability to really draw in a crowd, be a heat magnet.
Yeah.
And his commentary ability as well, because, you know, I guess that's a big part of who I am. Like, I'm more of the guy that's interested in the characters, because that's more down my alley. I'd like to say I'm confident more so in the microphone skills and that. Tried to do a sweet chin music once. Didn't really work out. Might have done a sweet shin music. That's about it.
There's something you can lean on there as a signature move, maybe. I remember there was who used to do it? Oh, I don't even think we can say the wrestler's name anymore, but he used to hang out with the Elite, and, you know, all those guys were doing, you know, switching musics and super kicks and stuff like that. And I remember I didn't think he could ever do one, and he used to do that. He used to be like, up here, and they'd be like, go to block it, and then he'd kick them in the shin, they'd drop to the knee, and then he'd kick them. And I was always like, this is just because he can't actually do one, was how I felt about it. And I was like, but it's pretty smart. It's working with the skill set he had. So I thought that was pretty smart at the time. But yeah, fuck that guy. So anyway, my first you got me thinking about the first time I seen Shawn Michaels, and it was WrestleMania 9. So that was like the first WrestleMania I ever watched. In fact, the first wrestling pay-per-view I ever watched. And that is the opening match with him and Tatanka. You ever see that match?
Ah, yes. Yes, I did. It's funny. I wasn't as sort of into that show as much as, like, the fact that they're in an outside arena and Caesar's Palace and all that sort of stuff. That's the part that gets me the most, actually.
Yeah, and for me, like, as a kid, like, it was the first thing I saw, and I think I just still hold that show in such high regard because it was, like, the first one, right? And it seemed so cool, and it was this huge outdoor stadium, and, you know, they're doing all the toga stuff.
And Jim Ross was in a toga.
Yeah, exactly. So Bobby Heenan on the elephant backwards and, you know, all this kind of gaga stuff and things like that. But that match with him and Tatanka was the first time I ever saw, like, anybody really kind of wrestling kind of thing. And it was a surprisingly good match. I went back and watched that match not even that long ago, and I was like, this holds up. It's pretty good, actually. Yeah.
Well, it is Shawn Michaels after all.
Well, exactly. I mean, he's not really capable of having a bad match, is he? So that's it. But yeah, and King is the same one. Like, he's this guy who is just, yeah, like you said, he doesn't really do that much, but he just holds everybody's attention. Like, he can just absolutely captivate a crowd and control the whole thing. Like, it's pretty amazing.
And yeah, look, I mean, I'm pretty sure he's still wrestling now as well. And he's like in his 70s, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, wow.
I read like 3 years ago, he had a, of all things, a casket match with Enzo on the.
What?
On the independent scene. Yeah, look it up. It's, I'm like,
that's insane.
Of all the things.
Like, I bet you the place was packed as well. I mean, he knows how to draw. He's been running wrestling shows for a while, so I'm sure he knew what he was doing. Exactly. Oh, that's awesome. Well, so what kind of age were you when you were getting into this, and how do you, being a person in Australia, which I also was, even find wrestling? Because it was not really around, you know?
Well, what came to being like around about the year 1999, like, I mean, I watched a bit of stuff with Shawn Michaels, and that's in 96 from videotapes, but fast forward, 99, that was when I first actually discovered wrestling as such, and that was through my brother. Like, my brother's watching this this stuff on WWF Superstars, I think it was. And I was like, what's this? And like, I thought, wow, this is really cool. And then I started to, you know, we started to reenact the moves and things like that. Thought it was awesome. And then that led to me, you know, obviously just, you know, doing tape swapping and, you know, discovering Shawn Michaels in that video, like I said. And then later down the track going, oh, I'm going to start my own backyard wrestling company. And
really?
Yeah. Drag some mattresses down to a school that I used to go to, an old primary school, and they had these, like, metal structures that, like, kindergarten kids used to use, but they like, got rid of that, but they just left it like it was, like, a, I don't know, junkyard or something. So they're like, that junkyard is our treasure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we set it up, hitting each other with light tubes on our back, not on the head.
Just straight into deathmatch.
Straight into deathmatch.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, doing moves very wrong, like, you know, DDT, I'll, like, keep going down and, boom, you're impaled into the ground. I'm not going to release you and things like that. So, yeah. But, hey, we got started. It was called BWE, Belmont Wrestling Entertainment.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, we filmed our stuff, had our characters. It was that was where we started.
And then how did you find out that there was, like, actually wrestling in Perth?
It's all word of mouth, friend of a friend of a friend. And, like, my first outing, I guess, I ended up going on a bus and a train or something like that, and finally got to Mirrabooka, of all places. And there was this was predating AAW, so it was called X-WOW. And they hired a – I think it was a judo ring or something like that. And me and my friend, Alan Aldworth, we put on a match. I did a backhand chop at one stage and really, really tried to, you know, really impress these people. You know, I was like 17, I think, something like that.
Yeah.
And from there, they got a ring. I joined X-WOW, which became AAW back in 2005, I think it was. And, yeah, made that journey to Port Kennedy twice a week to train and train with the Shark.
Yep.
And not too long after that, made the trip to Canada to learn under Lance Storm.
Absolutely, because the Shark was a graduate of Lance Storm School as well, wasn't he?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so he was a part of my class. Yep. Myself, him, Slate, so Jared Slate.
Yes.
We also had Tennille Dashwood. Yes. In the same course as well, Fatman.
That's it. Oh, so okay. So at that point, Shark was doing some training stuff with you, but he hadn't been to Lance Storm himself yet. So you guys all went together.
Yes, yes. Yeah, okay. It was funny. Like, we were, I remember in the lead up to that, we were actually possibly going to go to Dory Funk's school. So there was talk of that, and then Lance's, and I think it came down to the fact that Carlo Cannon came down to AAW to wrestle and was like, hey, Lance School's great, blah, blah, blah. And so much so that he even came to the same time that we did.
Oh,
so
really?
I kind of sealed the deal there. And, like, Hey, I'll never regret it because, Lancer School was absolutely fantastic. And you think of the names that have been through there as well, for that matter. And he's absolutely brilliant. He's good. He's big on the dad jokes as well.
You know what's funny is that, like, with the exception of Tennille Dashwood, I think I've now speaking to you, maybe spoken to everybody that was in that class. So I've definitely interviewed Shark and he talked about his time with Landstorm. I've definitely interviewed Slate and I've definitely interviewed you. And I remember both of them saying, oh, yeah, there were heaps of Aussies there at the time. Was there anybody else you can think of that was in that class, or was it the four of you?
You had Mikey Broderick.
Okay, I haven't spoken to him. I do know who he is, so yeah, absolutely.
Lightning Luke Watts, or the Hope from the Top Rope, as I hear he's called.
Great.
And there was one other guy who's, he's stopped wrestling, but he's been quite successful for fitness. So, yeah, it was quite a lot of us Aussies there, and they continue to be for several years to come as well.
Sure, that's it. And how did you find Canada? Because I've had American friends and people say to me, they're like, you'd love Canada. It's kind of like the Australia of America. It's kind of how it's described to me. Did you find it pretty different, or?
It really is. I remember, so we stayed at a house that Landstorm owned, which was very convenient, really cool. And I remember hearing about Canadians being really, really nice and stuff.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I saw it firsthand when I was crossing over some sort of highway or something. And there was five cars. As soon as they passed, I would have easily been been able to walk over to the other side of the road without issue, without waiting that long.
Yeah.
All these cars waited for me. They're like, you can go. I'm like, seriously, you're like, so nice. Nice.
Yeah, it's now awkward. You guys are in cars. You can definitely just go.
I would have walked over in 5 seconds, you've gone. It's all good. But, absolutely loved Canada and the food and, the wings I think it's on a Tuesday night. The people were really nice. Would have loved to have, sort of got around the scene a bit more in terms of picking up wrestling bookings. But, hey, that's okay. It was a great 12 weeks of training.
Yeah.
Apart from the second last week.
Yes.
But everything was awesome there.
Mm. Yeah, spoiler alert, I know how this story ends, but why don't you take us through a little bit for the listeners? So we won't jump straight to the end. Let's just break down the training a little bit more. How was it for you, getting there, moving in, speaking to Lance? You know what I mean? This guy is a big star. He was on TV. He's a very well-known and well-respected wrestler. How was he when you first met him? Very warm, very open. How did you feel about everything?
Well, it's funny. He picked us up from the airport, and there was this escalator as well going down. And then we just it was me, Shark, and Slate, and we're like, oh my god, that's him. It's him. And he's just got this face. He's just so Forrest Gump. He's got the Forrest Gump haircut, but he's very just serious.
Deadpan. Yeah, sure.
And I was like, oh my god, it's him. It's him. And look, he was great. The training itself, anyone starting that can, is athletic enough, can certainly do the training, because it's just very well structured in terms of the bare basics of, break falling and moves and then putting a match together. I couldn't fault it. The only thing that we thought, we're like, when we're done the course, we're like, dude, you need to do an advanced level of what you do because of the many, many years of experience. But then one would argue, get out there and wrestle on the independent scene and, get those advanced skills, which is fair enough. I agree with that concept too. His way of explaining, we'll do watch our matches back, and he'd really break things down, talk about match structure, talk about, even things you know, why decisions were made in WWE that, you know, he may not have agreed with, but, you know, for creative directions or even a pet peeve of Vince McMahon, which was quite interesting. So I'll just tell you this one. Anytime someone gets whipped into the turnbuckle, they tend to sort of like sit into the buckle, if you know what I mean.
Rest on the arms up on the ropes, kind of catch their breath.
And
yeah, sure.
He would teach us not to do that. I mean, just and he's just talking about the things that they look for. And it was Vince McMahon's sort of mindset that thought that, hey, that kind of looks like you're sitting in an armchair.
Yeah. You can see it. So it's like find a way that if you're like whipped in to look like you're, you know, discombobulated or hanging there or like hurt or something, opposed to just like resting in the corner ropes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
So hearing those little bits of tidbits was quite juicy, but also at the same time, it just, you know, gave you an idea of what they like to have in a wrestler as a part of that big time company.
Yeah, yeah. It would have been fascinating because, I mean, at the time, you know, you have wrestled in companies in Australia and things like that. So you're like, I am a wrestler and I know how to do wrestling things. And so pretty interesting to sort of ground it back to basics, right, and go, okay, well, let's look at it through the lens of how they look at it in a big TV company and how do I then apply that to the way I already do things, right?
Absolutely. And, yeah, look, I could have walked in there and went, I already know this stuff. I already know how to bump, you know, all that. It's not going to do anyone favors. Look, I'll keep that in the back of my mind. I'm going to pick up some things a little bit quicker because I've already done it, but I'm going to eat humble pie and just go in clean. He's got an idea that we've wrestled before, but it's not the right attitude to have if you go in with that. No. So just go in there and follow the course as per the guidelines and then we went from there and, yeah, look, we all got to wrestle him as well, which was cool. So, it was a great experience.
That's really awesome. Before we jump into what happened in the second last week, you said that it would have been cool if they had like another, you know, another level of course or whatever. And I remember that was something that I remember Taz on his podcast said that he used to have a school, but he never referred to it like as a training school. He said it was a finishing school. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about, right? Like he was like, I would take people who are experienced and I would help them refine, you know, their gimmick, their skills, tighten things up, develop things to put them in a better place where they go from there. So do you think that that is something that obviously he's not interested in doing? I don't even know if he does his normal school, but if there was that sort of level of secondary course that would help, you know?
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. Like, 'cause like, for example, like the feedback he gave us in the end was, and Jared Slade had the best feedback, by the way. I remember exactly to a T, he said, you'll do good on the indie scene. No, you'll do great on the indie scene. That was all he needed to say. So I was like, wow, great feedback.
I mean, he still does great on the indie scene even now.
Well, he does, yeah. He knew it all.
Yeah.
In terms of like, say for me, my feedback was the in-betweens. In-betweens, I'd like to say comes from, you know, ring repetition and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, hey, he's been wrestling for oh so many years. I'd like to think that something as subtle as that, which means so much, can be put into an advanced class. But I think a big thing would be, okay, he's seen people come and go, you know, while he was there with a big company. He knows or at least has an idea of what they're after. Like maybe is it a case of putting on a match that is best to that person's capabilities and him working with you on that so you can put that tape forward or, you know, ideas on the best way to promote yourself to talent scouts. You know, things like that.
It's just super interesting, like the way that teaching can work and somebody with that much knowledge of how they could share it in different ways. I think your feedback is probably pretty awesome, right? Like, and it must have felt good. And I know you were dealing with your troubles at that time. And we don't worry, listener, we will get to that. But like, to tell you, like, to look at the in between things, to me, that reads as you're actually doing the main things really well. Like, the fundamentals are here. You're doing all that. It's clear that you're experienced and stuff. Maybe it's just time to think about those little threads. And for a lot of people, sometimes you don't, you just do and you don't think about that. And even that piece of feedback to just say, just think about those things, maybe turns a click in your head and you go, oh, what do I do in that moment when I'm hanging on the ropes or whatever, you know, those kind of things where you maybe wouldn't have thought of that before. And I think that's just like a really good piece of teaching advice in general, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Look, and he was good on, like, he thought character stuff, great. You're doing awesome. But I think, I mean, over time, I'd like to say that I improved on that feedback, definitely. Sure. And it was just simply a case of like, okay, don't go move. You know, there's got to be, you know, like, you've just done this move and it hasn't worked. Oh, how are you feeling? That's part of your in-between, right?
Yeah.
You know, are you going to emote a thought process on your face there to sort of just go frustrated or, I'm thinking of what I could do next. Maybe I need to beat his head in a bit more. You know, really emote that to the fans and put a rhyme and reason into your body language of why you're doing the next
thing.
It's
like, why has he chosen to do that? Maybe he should have gone for a pin. And that's when, you know, commentary like, well, he's clearly frustrated and so he's kind of snapped a little bit and that's why he's on that. So emoting those things and showing that can tell the story for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because we can easily, you know, wrestling can easily go into like a dance recital, you know, love that feedback.
Now that's awesome. Well, let's tell the story then of what kind of happened in that second last week and how it kind of took a little bit of a downturn for yourself.
Okay, absolutely. So look, second last week of training, I ended up having a match with Mikey Broderick, and I wanted to sort of, you know, take things up to the next level. And I'm not necessarily the most athletic or high-flying wrestler. Never have, never will be. You know, I'm more character-based, much like a Jerry the King Lawler. I liken to that.
Sure.
But I thought, no, I want to impress Lance Storm tonight. Or today, it was during the day, and I thought, what I'm going to do is in this match, I'm going to go up to the top rope, and I'm going to do a crossbody like he's never seen me do a crossbody before, like a nice big one. Mm-hmm. But the plan for that match is for Mikey to move out of the way, and then I crash and burn and eat a spear, and that's it.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, cool. Mm-hmm. So we planned that match, no worries. I go up to the top rope, and this is a timed match, by the way. So we're working on timed matches, much like for TV, you know, going over time. Big Boss ain't happy. Sure. Anyway, so I go up to the top, big jump, and it is higher than I've ever jumped before. And Mikey moves out of the way as the plan is. And as I'm coming down, I'm like, I did the worst thing you can do. I second guessed myself because I was like, oh, this is way too high.
Yeah.
Extended my left arm out and
to stop yourself kind of thing.
Yeah. Stop myself, which is the worst thing you can do. Didn't properly pancake fall, if you want to call it that, front bump. And felt something that didn't feel right. Felt a little blood rushing to my arm. And I was agonizing in pain. I was like, ooh, and my referee's just like, get up. Yeah. Time for my up.
Yeah.
Like, I did something wrong.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Still got up anyway.
Yeah.
Took the spear tackle, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
And, so we watched the match back.
Oh, that would be worse than living it.
Oh, trust me. And then Lance's comment, I kid you not, he saw that. He's just like, well, you shouldn't have done that.
And you're like, yeah, no shit.
So, yeah, look, that ended up being I slept that night, woke up the next day, my arm was huge. Yeah, had a broken radius bone. So, metal rod, screws. Several months later, I was back in a wrestling ring. Yeah, but, yeah, my free tattoo from Canada.
Oh, yeah. Taking me back, as I was telling you off mic, and I've talked about on the podcast recently, I recently broke my wrists and had to get a steel plate put in as well. So I absolutely feel this story way too close to home at the moment, you know. It's not a great feeling, but medical science is amazing. Like you said, you were back at it a couple of months later, so that's pretty awesome.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's kind of funny, like I remember coming back and then got the surgery and all that sort of stuff and getting told by a doctor that, oh, okay, so you need to wait a year and then get the rod taken out and then wait another 6 months and then you can do your wrestling again. And I was devastated.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I just came back from Canada. I've learned all this stuff, you know, blah, blah. I'm sitting on the sidelines by watching training and all that sort of stuff. So I did something that, like, a lot of sports people do, a lot of and I recommend anyone should do, and I got a second opinion.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, I ended up seeing an actual sports doctor who's dealt with numerous basketball players and things like that, because basketball players will certainly come across an injury like mine.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he just told me to leave the rod in there and, you know, rehab it and be good to go, and I've never looked back. That was in 2008. So,
So now you're Lex Luger'd up.
Fucking. Yeah, I was thinking about that, being Lex Luger-ish.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm going to beat through metal detectors and all that sort of stuff.
I did go on a plane the other day, and I was so disappointed when my wrist didn't go off when they hit me with the thingy. I was like, oh, I thought I was going to be like part robot, or I'd be able to see it on the X-ray thing or something, but no, nah, that's nothing. It was
absolutely metal in you.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm going to break someone else, but don't say that too loud. My wife would freak out. She's still traumatized from when it happened. But yeah, how was it though? Like having to deal with medical stuff in another country, because that's a little bit scary in itself. Like, did you have to go to a hospital there, get a cast? How'd it go down?
So I did have traveler's insurance, but I didn't have good traveler's insurance. Let's put it that way. And, yeah, look, I went to a doctor and all that, and Canada's got great healthcare if you are a resident or if you're a Canadian.
Okay.
And I was neither. So, yeah, look, they wanted oh so much money up front. So all I could get was sort of like my arm bandaged up. And, yeah, I just had to wait a couple of weeks before we got back to Perth and finally get that surgery done and recover from there. But, yeah, and it was it's good if you are those two things. If you're not,
Yeah, exactly. I had to fly back from Melbourne with the cast kind of thing, because I was like, do you want to get a surgery here? No, we can do it for a few days. And I was like, can I actually just go home? And they were like, yeah. They're like, you can. They kind of cast me in a way that I guess it wasn't completely sealed, so you can kind of fly with it and stuff like that. So I did a wide tour the next day. And went on like a Harry Potter forest walk at night and shit like that. I was like, fuck it. I'm like, I'm going to finish my holiday and then with all my friends. But I was with all my friends and everybody was taking really good care of me. It was awesome. And then, yeah, I flew back and lived with a broken wrist for about another week or so until, you know, I could get referred and get in and stuff like that. And then it was fine after it was done. But yeah, it doesn't feel nice when it's just loose. And I'm sure for you waiting around and then having to fly so far home with it like that was not a nice experience.
No, it wasn't. But like, I mean, I guess I was just sort of thankful of like, thank God this happened like towards the end, like not at the very start. And, you know, it was an awesome experience in Canada. So I, you know, had that to think about and I'm like, I actually don't mind airports. I had my PSP. I was just keeping myself busy.
You're fine. I'm sure Lance Storm remembers the guy who broke his arm in class as well. So you might stand out. That may not have happened that many times.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And you know, bled in his ring from a Das Boot from Jarrod Slate.
Oh, yeah, that'll do it.
You know, things like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. See, you're already making impressions. That's a good thing. Well, so once you get back, you're all rebuilt and everything. And then I guess, fast forward it out, you've been doing, kind of mainstay the purse stuff for quite a while. Did you then go on? Have you been doing stuff over East, around Australia? You ever go back international?
Yeah, I did go international. Went to Mach 1 Pro Wrestling, mm-hmm. Which was quite interesting. So that was in SoCal, mm-hmm. Southern California, mm-hmm. and wrestled there a couple of times in between a holiday. So I thought, while I'm here, might as well. So I caught up with David Marquez, who, does a lot of promoting for NWA and various other
The name is familiar, as well. For sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And, it was great. And anytime I'm there, he takes us on a tour of Disneyland because he used to work there for a while as well. Nice. Doing that was like a cool little bucket list item ticked off the list. Beyond that, I never, there was a point of time I had some ambitions to go, hey, I could really take this thing and go international and that. And I quickly sort of decided that, no, I'm actually very happy being in Australia doing my thing. Like, I've got other pursuits outside of wrestling. But what I do want to commit to is bringing up Australian wrestling in some way, shape, or form, getting more people watching the product. Because, like I've said earlier, there is a lots and lots of amazing talent that do deserve more of a limelight, do deserve, if they're interested, potential opportunities for tryouts and WWE contracts or any of those other companies that are out there. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm at is just bringing up WA wrestling, Australian wrestling for that matter.
Absolutely.
Did a couple of bits in Melbourne as well, mm-hmm. NAW. Under George Julio,
mm-hmm.
Australian wrestling legend.
Absolutely.
And I've wrestled at Gippsland Pro Wrestling in a town called Moe in a bar. That was fun. I antagonized them so much, and yet for some reason they all bought my merch and they're all happy with me. I was like, okay, cool. Yeah, done my job, even though I was a dick.
They love it. That's awesome. So, and that's the thing, right? It's like there's no reason that as the scene grows in Australia that you can't be like there can't be the opportunities here that there can be anywhere else. You know what I mean? We just need to all kind of contribute and continue to build on it. And I think there's like some really great companies doing some really fun stuff, and that's all you need, really.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's the big O opportunity. Giving people that normally wouldn't have an opportunity a chance, really listening to what the crowd's after, changing up some of the people that you may promote. It's not all about the extra muscly sort of guys. There's some great characters out there that can draw people in as well. So. I'm thinking. I really do feel Australian wrestling just gets better every year. I'm just hoping that there is far more eyes on the product, and things get to the point of maybe TV deals. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, the internet shrinks the world anyway. Like the majority of the independent wrestling I watch from America is just on the internet, it's YouTube, it's IWTV and things like that. And there's no reason that Australian shows can't do that. They can do exactly the same things and then people in America can watch that. You know what I mean? It works exactly the same way.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now that's really awesome. Well, then what's next for you? We know you're the reigning defending Southern Cross champ over at STW, Southern Territory Wrestling. What else have you got on the cards? You're a busy man these days.
Well, I've got the next show coming up for that on the 26th of October. So I do believe there could be a title defense right there. Mm-hmm. But Also on the same night, NHPW, I wrestle for them. They have a show as well. So might be pulling double duty.
Double duty.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. He's a busy man.
It's been a while.
Exactly. I'm already exhausted for you at the idea of doing both. And I know where those companies run either. That's not exactly close.
No, it's not. No, yeah. No. So it's all about, negotiating with the promoter and going, hey, can you put me on early? I can't be at two places at once.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Put me on early here, put me on later there. Can we work something out? Yeah.
Absolutely.
It sucks, unfortunately, sometimes. Yeah, look, these companies sometimes just book on the same night, and that might be just because of scheduling conflicts. They've had to change a date or something for an international guest or something. So it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason we can't all work together, right? It's Perth. It's not a very big place.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's really fun. Are you working anywhere else at the moment? You are, right? Because I've always seen you. I think I've seen you around EPW quite a bit. Have you heard of Dude Where's My Ring? Any chance where you might see the gorgeous one popping his head in there as well?
See, I've chatted to Michelle about that concept, and I've always wanted to come down and check it out. And
well, I mean, you started with Tubes. Let's just go full circle straight back to it.
To me, it's about, all right, what can I do there that's going to work for the company? Because I think, the hardcore stuff, it's not really my forte. I mean, I could bring back my very first backyard wrestling character, which was Inferno Mike, number one, baby.
Inferno Mike, hell yeah.
Place.
Well, no, I will say that not everybody at Dude is constantly doing death matches. I mean, we have that flavor on there, but there's, the majority of the show is not sling and glass,
Yeah, and that's the part I'm just like, I mean, the sling and glass might be, hey, me enjoying a fine wine and, spilling
imagine,
it in someone's
this is
face.
Writing itself. This is already writing itself where he's talking up a promo about sling and glass. Everybody thinks he's talking about Tubes, but he's literally just pouring a nice Chianti. The promos, you're already doing it without even trying,
Well, there you go. See, yeah. Well, we're developing ideas right in front of ourselves. It's trying yourself.
That's
yeah.
It. Yeah.
I love the fact that, there's this different product out there that's and it's in a bar. Look, the amount of people that love the bar with wrestling concept, like who doesn't love a bit of entertainment right in your face?
Yeah.
It's a reason why Varsity keeps having a NHPW back for wrestling shows as well. So it's a winning combination.
Absolutely. All my friends love going to bars, and so as a result, they all love going to those shows. I probably couldn't drag them kicking and screaming, out to the sticks to go watch like a show with a ring for any of those promotions, but they're like, what, seasonal, mainlands? I'll be there. And they're like, screaming along with the best of them, It just kind of works for a different demographic, which is why I think it's worked so well in Perth as well, because though there's a slight overlap and there's definitely hardcore fans that will jump between two, it definitely completely has its own audience,
Yeah, and then that's the good thing about it, because it's sort of like you're competing against, three other companies, you don't have a ring. Well, what do? You look at the things that are going to make you stand out, be different, and, like 18-plus, swearing, blood, hey, there's an audience for that.
Yeah, there definitely is. And it's been very fun. So, yeah, hopefully we could wing something someday. I think you would absolutely be able to carve out a place for yourself.
Absolutely. Well, look, I will be honest. My time in terms of wrestling is ticking away. I haven't told many people this, so it's on your podcast right here. The body is starting to go, hey.
Yeah, sure.
We need to ease things up. But
I can relate. I don't even wrestle and my body's doing that, so I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So, I mean, I recently had an injury where all it was, I went from doing a squat to a sit-up, and it wasn't even the act of the two. I just went to move into the next position, and then boom, something popped in my leg. I thought it was just a corked leg, and I was just like, ah, whatever, let it rest for a bit. Then I did some, I was doing some work on my house, and then boom, it happened again. I was like, oh God, I've got a match in a couple of weeks.
This is a thing now, yeah.
So going over my match, my leg's still sore. I'm like, all right, I'm going to avoid certain things. I like to do a Luthes press sometimes, you know, maybe you shouldn't do that because it's around the knees and all that stuff. Better not do that. So I took out certain moves. I'm like, all right, cool. We're sweet. Go to run off the ropes. My leg muscle in my quad just pulled. I was like, great.
The famous Triple H injury. There you go. You'll be coming back in like 20 leather jackets and 3 denim jackets. And
are we referring to Triple H?
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
That was brilliant. So jacked.
Yes.
But it's funny how that injury works because, like, I got to confirm that, you know, I did tear one of my quad muscles.
Oh, mate.
And, like, but I was still able to walk around in that, but my knee was very bruised. I was like, what the hell's going on there? And it turns out, like, your knee's sort of working overtime to compensate for, you know, one muscle that's taking a siesta.
Got ya.
That's.
And how long ago was this?
That was when I won the SDW title. The Southern Cross title,
Oh, dude, that sucks.
So, I told him afterwards, I'm like, oh, by the way, I had a little tear. He's like, oh, you're right. I'm like, yeah, I'm recovering. I had to pull out of one of the NHPW show a couple of weeks later. I needed time to recover because these things, they take time. Yeah. So should be all good by the 26th.
I was going to say, because you know what really helps, doing double duty on the same night. That's going to really
– It doesn't help, no. So, I mean, look, I'm not saying necessarily that those are the things that, you know, can lead me down the path of going, okay, maybe I need to wind things up. It's just it did sort of make me think. And then I don't know. I'm getting to the point where I'm kind of like, I'm more interested in wanting to head down the general manager pathway, maybe a manager pathway, because I love wrestling. I'm never going to stop loving wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
But
the physicality of it might be starting to get a bit old.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, like, I don't even feel like I know I'm not making this. I wouldn't make this decision out of the fact that my body is going. I don't want to do this. Like, I'm more so motivated to just want to do those things. So that's honestly where I'm at. Which is cool. Like, I'm excited by that. It's not a case of, I need to stop soon, and you know that's the main reason I'm not. It's not.
Yeah.
I want to contribute in ways that, and this is going back to something that I heard Adam Pearce say on a podcast. He was talking about how his role is to sort of be that glue between and that sort of narrator. Of these stories between these two rivals or several rivals or whatever that may be. And with my confidence of what I can do in terms of communication to the crowd, mic work, all that sort of stuff, I'm like, hey, that's my next thing to contribute. And it feels exciting.
That's really interesting. Yeah. That's also what Lance Storm told you to focus on as well. Remember, he said focus on the in-between parts, and maybe your career actually lies in the in-between parts rather than in the actual wrestling.
Yeah, could be. Like, I
maybe
mean,
he it, called it all those shits. Yeah, exactly. And it's we've only just met today, but you come across a very well-spoken, you know what I mean, great voice, great smile on him, all those things. So there's no reason that there's not even more avenues, you know, in and around the ring. Like I could absolutely see you doing commentary, ring announcing, management, you know, all the things that move and are wrestling, you know.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's, I guess also I think the excitement comes down to, like I was saying earlier, the fact that we've got such amazing talent around Australia. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I've got a background. I used to do have my own radio show for a couple of years on Triple M as well. And, you know, I just was like,
Tom Catchin, it's the radio voice. That's what it is.
There's these skills that, you know, are developed and stuff. And I'm like, you know, like they're just sitting idly by. They get used on the odd occasion when I wrestle and promote a match. And I'm like, maybe that's the next step. So
yeah, sure.
Watch this space.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I, for one, will be very interested to see, you know, what is coming and what is next for you. Where does everybody follow you online and whatnot so they can, you know, keep up with what's happening?
Well, at Gorgeous Gary, I'm just going to double check that because someone took one of my Twitter, one of my handles. So I'm going to just double check we're still good.
You end up promoting some hacker.
Oh, yes, definitely not. But I am on Facebook and I am on Instagram. They're the only two that I do use. I did have a Twitter account a while ago, but no, I'm still Gorgeous Gary on Facebook, so check that out, at Gorgeous Gary. Mm-hmm. And on Instagram should be the same thing as well.
There you go. And I will put those links in the show notes. So, yeah, if you are in Perth and around this area and you want to see Gary pulling double duty, if you want to pull double duty yourself and go to both shows on October 26th, that's Southern Territory Wrestling's Destined for Victory or New Horizon Pro Wrestling's Trick or Treat, Gary will be at both. So do you know which show you'll be at first and which show you'll be at second? So they can follow your journey.
I think it'll be STW. I think I'll be there first. Yeah. And then, to the other one.
There you go. If you want to carpool with Gary STW, between shows.
I've got to say.
Yeah.
It's a big night for wrestling. I mean, it's all about – you've got Timothy Thatcher NHPW, and then you've also got Paul London.
Yeah, Paul
at
London.
STW. Like, this is huge.
Yeah, that's
this
huge. I did not know Timothy Thatcher was here for that. That's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely huge. So,
there you go. So, guys, there's no reason to not catch both. You can carpool with Gary between the shows. He'll be driving a bus. Doing both. That sounds awesome. Well, man, I want to thank you so much for your time, for giving us a little like peek into your life and what's going on and where your headspace is. And I, for one, can't wait to see what happens next. And hopefully down the track a little bit, maybe we'll get you back on and you can update us on what you've been up to, yeah?
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity and thank you for promoting Australian wrestling. It's people like you that, you know, gets people more interested in what we do. You're adding to that. So any promotion, it's appreciated. And, we all love you all for it.
Well, thank you, man. That's very, very kind. It can be a thankless job being a podcaster where I'm like, oh, fuck, I got to do this thing again. But, like, every time I do it and I have a conversation with somebody like yourself, I'm always glad I did because, you know, you always meet a new friend and get to get, like, a different insight into the world of wrestling, and that's always really enjoyable. So I'm so glad we did this, man, and I can't wait to – I'll catch you in person one time. We'll share a beer or something, yeah?
Oh, definitely. Hazy powwow, keeping us and cool.
There we go. That say less. Say less about that. Everybody, make sure you check out all the places you can find Gorgeous Gary. Check out Southern Territory Pro Wrestling. Check out New Horizon Pro Wrestling. Check out Dude, Where's My Ring? And most importantly, remember, it's all about peace, love, and pro wrestling. Thanks for listening. Faces and Feels is a proud member of the Countout Podcasting Network. It is created and hosted by me, Rafe Houston, edited by myself and the amazing Ryan Neitzy, and the show is available on all good podcast platforms, so please go rate and subscribe. You can follow the show everywhere on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, etc. at Faces Feels Cast, and you can check out the Countout Network and all our sister shows over there at Countout Pod. If you'd like to book me for commentary, have an interview request, a topic suggestion, or you just want to say hi, you can email us at facesandfeels@gmail.com. With all that said, thanks for listening, and please support our friends and sponsors. Peace.
My body is a roadmap of pain.
DeathmatchWorldwide.com, the official online merchandise store that is only for Deathmatch Wrestling. Featuring official t-shirts from No Peace Underground, John Wayne Murdoch, Akira, Madman Pondo, Zona 23, Neil Diamond Cutter, G. Rayburn, Schlack, Necro Butcher, and many more. If you are a Deathmatch wrestler, promotion, manager, or platform, and are interested in joining the web store, send us an email to deathmatchworldwide@yahoo.com. Deathmatchworldwide.com for the violent view.
This has been a Countout Podcast. Every year, the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame receives a new crop of potential inductees. And on our new Countout Patreon series titled The Ballot, it's our job to discuss whether or not these newbies should become Hall of Fame wrestlers. Hello, my name is Ryan Knightsey, and every month, a guest and I will analyze the regional careers of newly balloted wrestlers for the Observer Hall of Fame. Are they day one votes? Do they belong at all? Find out on The Ballot every month on patreon.com/countoutpod. Again, check out The Ballot on patreon.com/countoutpod. We hope to see you there.